Penguin Random House Audio presents Hitmakers, the science of popularity in an age of distraction. This is the author, Derek Thompson. Introduction. The song that conquered the world. Marco Polo describes a bridge, stone by stone. But which is the stone that supports the bridge? Kublai Khan asks. The bridge is not supported by one stone or another, Marco answers, but by the line of the arch that they form. Italo Calvino, Invisible Cities. The cartographers' guilds struck a map of the empire whose size was that of the empire and which coincided point for point with it. The following generations, who were not so fond of the study of cartography as their forebears had been, saw that that vast map was useless, and not without some pitilessness was it that they delivered it up to the inclemencies of sun and winters. In the deserts of the West, still today, there are tattered ruins of that map, inhabited by animals and beggars. Jorge Luis Borges, On Exactitude in Science. The first song I loved was my mother's. Each night she would sit on the left side of my bed and sing the same lullaby. Her voice was sweet and small and shaped to fit inside a bedroom. On trips to my maternal grandparents' house in Detroit, my mommy would sing the same tune in a lower register, with a scratchier timbre and German lyrics. I didn't know what the words meant, but I loved them for their ancient mystery in the old house. Guten Abend, gute Nacht. I used to think the song was a family heirloom, but in first grade at one of the first sleepovers in my Virginia hometown, a young friend turned the dial on the small music box by his bed, and digital chimes tinkled to a familiar tune. I learned that my mother's melody was not a family secret. It was astonishingly common. There's a strong possibility that you have heard it dozens of times and perhaps thousands. It is Johannes Brahms' lullaby, Wiegenlied, Lullaby and Goodnight, with roses bedight. Millions of families all over the world have sung a version of Brahms' lullaby to their children every night for more than a century. It is one of the most common melodies in the Western Hemisphere. Considering that a lullaby is sung every evening for hundreds of days a year for several years in a child's life, there is a real possibility that Brahms' lullaby could be one of the most heard songs in the Western Hemisphere, if not the world. Wiegenlied is undeniably beautiful and simple and repetitive, all necessary elements of any song produced for infants from the throats of tired parents. But a melody so universal is also a mystery. How did a 19th-century German tune become one of the world's most popular songs? Johannes Brahms, born in 1833 in Hamburg, was one of the most well-known composers of his time. Wiegenlied was his most immediate success. Published at the height of his popularity in 1868, the song was written as a lullaby for an old friend to sing to her new baby boy. But it soon became a hit throughout the continent and the world. One of Brahms' tricks for replenishing his deep well of pretty melodies was genre blending. He was a student of local music and a subtle thief of catchy choruses. When he traveled Europe, he would often visit a city's library to go through its folk song collections to study reams of sheet music and transcribe his favorite bits. Like a savvy modern songwriter sampling another artist's hook for his own music, or a clever designer stealing flourishes from other products, Brahms would incorporate far-flung folk tunes into his art songs. Several years before he wrote his famous lullaby, Brahms fell in love with a teenage soprano in Hamburg named Berthe. She sang many songs to him, like Alexander Baumann's Austrian folk song, Sis Andersht. Some years later, Berthe married another man, and they named their son Johannes after the composer. Brahms wanted to show his gratitude and, perhaps, his lingering affection. He wrote the couple a lullaby based on the old Austrian folk song that Berthe used to sing to him. For the lyrics, Brahms took a verse from a famous collection of German poems, Des Knaben Wunderhorn. Good evening, good night, with roses bedecked, with clove pinks adorned, slip under the blanket. In the morning, God willing, you will waken again. In the summer of 1868, Brahms sent the family sheet music for the lullaby with a note. Berta will realize that I wrote the vegan lead for her little one. She will find it quite in order that while she is singing Hans to sleep, a love song is being sung to her. The song's first major performance came 1 year later on December 22, 1869, in Vienna. It was a huge commercial success. Brahms' publisher rushed to make 14 arrangements of the song, the most of any Brahms piece by far, including for four-part men's choir, three-part piano, the harp, and the zither. A lot of Brahms' melodies are beautiful, but Wiegenlied uniquely fits the standard structure that modern music listeners recognize in hooks, said Daniel Beller McKenna, a Brahms scholar who serves on the board of directors at the American Brahms Society. It has the key elements of repetition and then gentle surprise, he went on, humming the tune intermittently as we spoke. Wiegenlied was an original, but it was also surprisingly familiar, an assembly of folk song allusions and Hamburg memories. One music historian said the piece so resembled Baumann's original folk song that it amounted to a veiled but identifiable parody. But this history still doesn't answer the most important question about the lullaby. How did it spread around the world? In the 20th century, most pop songs became popular because they played on the radio or on other mass media broadcasts again and again. Songs pushed their way into audiences' ears through car speakers, television sets, and movie theaters. To like a song, you first had to find it. Or, from another perspective, the song had to find you. In the 19th century, however, songs by famous composers may have hopped between concert halls, but there was no adequate technology to quickly move a song around the globe. To appreciate the slow pace at which culture traveled in Brahms' day, consider the leisurely transatlantic voyage of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. It debuted at the Kärntner Theater in Vienna in 1824, when Beethoven was reportedly so deaf he could not hear the thunderous applause. But the first performance in the United States wasn't for another 22 years in New York City in 1846. It took 9 more years for the symphony to first play in Boston. Imagine if every artistic masterwork took 31 years to cross the ocean today. Michael Jackson's album Thriller debuted in 1982, which means Jackson would have been dead for 4 years by the time Londoners could hear the title track and Billie Jean in 2013. Please Please Me, the first album by the Beatles, was released in March 1963 in the UK, so Americans would not have met the Beatles until the middle of the Clinton administration. In 2021, Europeans could look forward to the first season of Seinfeld. Radio signals weren't moving in the late 1870s, but German families were. While Brahms was at his creative peak, Central Europe was a cauldron of chaos, war, and famine. In the 20 years after Wiegenlied debuted in Vienna in 1869, German immigration to the United States soared, peaking at an all-time high in the 1880s. The United States took in more German immigrants between 1870 and 1890 than in the entire 20th century. A popular lullaby was blessed with fortuitous timing to be exported across Europe and into America, particularly the northern band of the country where most Germans settled, from the Northeast and Pennsylvania through Ohio and Michigan and into Wisconsin. A historic exodus of German-speaking families accomplished what neither radio nor any other technology could in 1870. An unprecedented transatlantic migration distributed the lullaby to America. Near the height of German emigration, in 1879, a part-time rabbi named Joseph Kahn lived in the small...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?